Welcome to the Sports Ethos Kings Cast. It's Daily, joined by my co-pilot, Liz. How are you?
What's going on, y'all?
We have a lot to catch up on. We took a little hiatus here, and the first thing I want to talk about are the exit interviews that the Sacramento Kings players and coaches and front office had as soon as the season was over. First player I want to talk about is De'Aaron Fox. Of course, he talks about how he was disappointed in that they could have won 52 games if they won the close games and they let some games slip away. And then he talks about how the conferences only get tougher. Somebody asked him about next steps, and he said, well, I want to continue to be more efficient, and I want to continue to work on my defense. And he mentioned how you need defensive consistency to win games in the playoffs, and he also wants to work on free throws. And then one of the last questions was, how do you feel about Coach Jordy leaving the team and joining the Brooklyn Nets? And then he kind of let us in on a little tidbit where he goes, yeah, Mikal called me about Jordy, and he had nothing but good things to say about him. And then interesting thing, though, that I took away from his time in the presser, he said that Jordy was responsible for him going to the next step. And he said that Jordy told him that he's not working hard enough to get to the next level, which I thought was great to know. And I am excited for Nets fans to have Coach Jordy as our new coach.
Yeah, it's going to be, it sucks to lose him, that's for sure, but definitely he deserves to be a head coach. He's obviously done like really great work, you know, since he's been in the league, but even more so his time in Sacramento. So it's a good thing for him, sad thing for us, but you know, I feel like, you know, I think he can do really good things in Brooklyn.
And I know we don't like to dwell on the past, but does it bother you a little bit how, like, everybody said in their exit interviews that the Kings could have won more than 50 games if a few things changed their way, went their way?
I mean, it doesn't really upset me because we watched every single game, you know what I mean? So it's more so like shoulda, coulda, woulda. And that's how sports goes. You know, there's many things you could change and the outcome, you know what I mean? Like, for instance, the Milwaukee game winner when Dame hit that three, like, you know, if we just would have hit one more free throw or two more, you know, if Malik wouldn't have missed those free throws, that's a win. I mean, there could have been so many instances where you could go back and just nitpick at every little thing, but that's just how sports goes. You miss shots, you make mistakes. I mean, no one in any sport is ever going to play in a perfect game. And if you do, it's very, very rare. So there's no point in dwelling on it. The only thing you can do is learn from it and, you know, train in the off season, continue to get better, continue to work on the things that you need to work on and, you know, get ready for the next season and, you know, move on from it. So.
Yeah, right on. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from Major League Baseball, golf, the NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. And then Keegan, when he was up there, he, you know, typical Keegan interview, he said he needs to work on shooting no matter what, no matter if shots are falling or not. He's going to work on being confident in all facets of his game, especially when he's battling all game against tough defenders and still having confidence to shoot. And then he said that if anything, as a team, they just need to improve their defense. That's what he stressed.
Yeah. I mean, defensively, there's things that you can always control. I mean, obviously, you know, you can control continuing to work on your game. You know, every shot's not going to go in. I mean, it's very rare that a player has like a perfect game from the field. It's not done very often. So you're going to miss shots. But the thing is how are you, you know, do you need to tweak your form maybe a little bit? Because that's just, you know, how some NBA players have to do it. They have to tweak their form sometimes to kind of feel more comfortable, you know, kind of what feels right. You know, coaches can, you know, obviously help with that. So you can continue to work on what you can work on. So as long as, you know, if you're going to play one-on-one throughout the summer, you know, I know they do some of these like runs through the summer where they're just playing with a bunch of different, you know, NBA players. I think, was it Rico Hines? He had like a camp type of thing last year. And like, there was a bunch of our guys, I think it was like Herter, Davion and Barnes. They were running with those guys. And I think Kevin Durant was there. So things like that, you know, just continuing to, you know, work on your own self or your own game. And then, you know, kind of get out there, you know, help other people work on their game as well. Cause that's just kind of what this NBA is like. It's weird, but it's like one big family. So everyone's just obviously trying to get better, because the better they get, the, you know, money, more money they're going to get, you know, from merchandise sales and things like that. So it's just all around working on your game, by yourself individually. And then also, you know, if you can get together with other people during the off season, you know, working. And that's what Keegan did last year. He got with Fox all the time. Like, you know, pretty much Fox said he saw Keegan every day, unless they were like out of, you know, town or whatever. Just, you know, playing constant one-on-ones or whatever, shooting around, doing what they need to do. So if Keegan can do that again this summer, I think he's definitely going to, you know, take another step in his game.
That's right. And then Domantas Sabonis, it was his turn. He talked about how there's no excuses for losing to lesser teams, quote unquote, lesser teams. And then, you know, there were injuries, and they have to feel like they need to adjust for key injuries to the team for them to win. And then his perspective on the season, he was like, yeah, we had a winning record, but no playoffs. So he was a little disappointed. Somebody asked him about the possibility of Malik Monk not re-signing with the team. And he kind of joked around. He was like, yeah, I'm constantly working on Malik Monk coming back. And then somebody asked him what he plans to work on over the summer. He was like, yeah, Doug Christie probably has a long laundry list for me to work on over the summer. So we're going to get started right away. And then they asked, you know, what do you think needs to happen for the offense? He was like, yeah, no, we just need to tweak the offense to get better shots for ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, that's the good thing, is I feel like, you know, these players that are currently here are just, you know, obviously dedicated to getting better. And it's amazing that these coaches are willing to, you know, kind of split up with certain individuals and, you know, help, you know, these players continue to develop, like with Doug Christie and Sabonis. He was even working with Chris Duarte last season. And then Fox was working with Luke Laux and, you know, obviously Keegan. So it's like nice when these assistant coaches are taking time, you know, to continue to help this team, you know, grow, and these individual players, you know, not only get better. And then, you know, Davion, I think he was traveling to different like countries, and they, he had one of the assistants with him. And then I think he was training with Steph Curry's shooting coach. So just like whatever you can do, you know, to get better is awesome, because, you know, once the season ends, some of these guys can just be like, I'm good, I'm gonna go kick up my feet, you know, whatever. But a lot of these players are just really focused on getting better. So it's nice. I guess you obviously want to take some time to get your body rested if you're dealing with some nagging injuries, but once that's over, you know, you get back out and do what you can do. So it's just nice to have all these coaches and players just wanting to get better and, you know, hope for the best for the next season and get, you know, obviously further into their goals that they want to.
So all the players had their moments at the press conference. I'm going to stop at Malik Monk, though, there and leave it at that. I don't want to, you know, analyze and talk about what JaVale McGee says. Not that he wasn't important, but it was Malik Monk's turn, and somebody asked him, you know, well, what's he going to do? Basically, as if he was going to say anything. And he just kept saying, yeah, I'm going to allow my agent to handle the business side. I have a good agent. I have faith that, you know, good things are going to come from it. Then he goes on to say that it's bittersweet, that could be his last game of the season. And he said that he just sat there at the end of that Pelicans game, just absorbing everything. And people were trying to get him to go to the locker room. He was like, no, let me just sit here. And he took it all in. And You know, I could see both ways on why he would want to move on and just to experience new things and get the bag, so to speak, and to maybe lead a team, or if he wants to come back and try to make something happen with one of his best friends and, you know, continue being a Sacramento King, considering this fan base has treated him well. And I think he realizes that. And then he admitted, like, yeah, I never had two good seasons like this. And you never know where you'll end up. You know, I might go to a place where I'm making more money. The situation just might not be good for me. So he understands what being in Sacramento has meant to his career. And you know, he's going to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the unknown is scary, especially with a guy like Malik Monk, because he, you know, obviously has brought so much, you know, not just on the court, but I think joy off the court, you know, just with his, you know, charisma and, you know, just his energy. And it's nice to have a player like that, you know, in Sacramento that just embraces the city. And, you know, he was always embracing the beam and taking pictures of it after games and things like that. So not only from, you know, the basketball side, but also the personal side, because that's like every player that, you know, mostly comes through Sacramento, you know, they leave a piece of them with the city, because every, you know, player is generally like, eh, Sacramento, you know, but then once they come, they experience, you know, the fans, the building, you know, whether that was Arco or, you know, with Golden One, like now they're like, okay, now I'm actually aware that, you know, Sacramento like is a place to be in regards to the Kings. So it's been nice to watch Malik, you know, the past 2 years. I don't want to think too much into it. You know, obviously when he's speaking to the media, you know, he can't really discuss things because he doesn't know. That's up to his agent and what they discuss, and, you know, like tampering and all, you can't just talk about, you know, things like that. Like, I do truly think that he wants to stay in Sacramento, but it comes with, obviously, you know, we're limited into what we can offer him. But that's obviously, you know, going to be up to Monty McNair and how he can work that out. And then, you know, if it's a better decision for him to go elsewhere because, you know, he gets paid more, maybe it's a better situation where he is starting on a team. You can't get mad at it because that's what these guys work for, you know, every single day. They want to, you know, obviously make money to take care of themselves financially, but they obviously, you know, want to be in a situation where they think they can help the team the most. So it's definitely going to be a big decision for him. And, you know, whether he stays or goes, always have love for Malik, always root him on, you know, outside of Sacramento, but it'll definitely be bittersweet if he leaves. But yeah, I just think, you know, he's done a lot of good things, and I love that his game has grown so much in Sacramento, because I feel like his other previous spots, you know, when he was with Charlotte, he obviously, I think, was dealing with injuries, maybe some legal stuff over there. And then, you know, when he went to LA, I feel like sometimes LA is just like a place to die for some of these guys. They just can't fully be themselves, especially when they're playing with guys like LeBron and Anthony Davis. So the fact that he was able to come to Sacramento, play with his, you know, one of his best friends and his college, you know, teammate, is just awesome. It was awesome to see. So yeah, I hope it's not the end, but if it is, you know, we'll still be rooting him on regardless of where he goes.
You know what, considering that fact that a lot of free agents, when they go to LA, most of the time they kind of fail. And the fact that Malik Monk thrived with the Lakers in that one season and really showed what he could do kind of says a lot about his skill level and what he could add to a team. Because, yeah, either players go to LA injured or they just don't perform how you think they're going to perform to the best of their ability. And he totally thrived. So I think that says a lot about him as a player.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
So it was the front office and the coach's turn to say their thing at the exit interviews. Mike Brown starts it off by saying the Kings would have jumped from 13th to the 7th ranked offense if they hit their free throws, which is, again, goes along with the coulda, shoulda, would have sentiment that you were saying in the beginning of this episode. Then he talked about how, yeah, the only way you could approach this is have a growth mindset, and how improvement comes from players experiencing losses and reflecting upon those losses. But then someone asked him about running it back. And he said that you know, rosters change every year, which I thought was a key thing that he said. I think by saying that, and he never really said that all year until now, which is actually the right time. I don't know why you would say, yeah, rosters change every year during the middle of the season. That's just not very functional. But he said rosters change every year. Monty and Wes are working on it. And he loves and appreciates everybody on the roster because they competed. And if there was anything that told you that some changes were going to be made, it's that little statement right there. And then he dropped this one jewel. And because somebody asked him, well, how do you feel about, you know, the pressure of this season compared to the first season where, you know, nobody knew what to expect, and then how everybody came into this season with expectations and pressure. And then he says this: pressure is a privilege. If there's no pressure, you're probably irrelevant. And I thought that was so good. I took note of that. And then somebody asked him how to improve the offense. And he was like, it's a little too early to tell. He talked about players having a catalog of situational adjustments and allowing players more freedom to show what they could bring to the table. And they could also improve their shot selection. So he said a lot of good things. And I think the best part was that he kind of let you know that change is going to be coming sooner than later.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the part is, if you look at a lot of teams, especially the competing teams, a lot of things that tend to change is like the rotation pieces. Like, obviously you have your core guys, and then you're trying to, you know, figure out what, you know, you're trying to plug and play what's going to work best for your team, you know, moving forward in the next season. So I had no issue with running it back, you know, this previous season because of, you know, the way some players were getting paid. You know, we obviously want to keep that flexibility for future, like Monty always talks about. So I was fine with keeping it the way it was. And then obviously, you know, doing what they needed to do on the bench and trying to figure out like their rotational pieces. Now, after this season, now you're kind of like, you know, it's time to make some decent changes. And then obviously they're probably banking on Keegan getting even better this next season, which I think is possible. So yeah, I just, with what they said, you know, obviously they're not going to reveal their master plan of what they're thinking, but they gave just enough to kind of basically tell us that like changes are coming, and you know, they're going to do what they think is best for the team to try to get better and try to get this team, you know, obviously back into the playoffs and hopefully, you know, into the second round or maybe even a Western Conference Finals type of thing. So yeah, I don't tend to like nitpick a lot what these guys say, because a lot of it is just like face value stuff, because again, they're not going to tell you what their mind is thinking, you know, what their boardrooms are all, you know, their boardroom or whatever they have, you know, going on. So they're just going to basically answer the questions very, you know, face value. But, you know, try to kind of leave it with like a little bit of a cliffhanger to kind of, you know, have people nitpick, because of course these, you know, media people, that's what they're going to do, is so they can go back and write their articles and get some clickbait or whatever they want to do. But yeah, I enjoyed what Mike Brown said, you know, and then obviously what Monty said as well, but just, yeah, great stuff by both of them. Because again, they're not going to give out too much.
Speaking of a master plan, Monty McNair gets on the mic and he recaps the season. He does talk, you know, he admits that he was disappointed, but then he talks about the bright spots, which were basically everyone's improvement, especially Domas and De'Aaron, how De'Aaron was, you know, the leader in steals over the season, and then Domas was the leader in double-doubles. And he talked about all the player accomplishments. Then he talked about the four ways to improvement, which was internally, through the draft, via trade, or free agency. And I think one of the coolest things that he talked about was just he offered a perspective, which is what we always do on this podcast, right? We always just offer a perspective instead of just, you know, being doom and gloom about the team after every loss or so. We always just, you know, think about another way to look at things. And he was like, well, I know we didn't make the playoffs this season, but if you look at it from a 2-year horizon, we broke a playoff drought and we got 90 plus win wins. And then we also beat the Warriors in the play-in. So, you know, I like the fact, he said, I like the fact that that's still not good enough in that we have a standard to keep now. And you know, things are only going to get better. And then also that's a testament to how strong this conference has gotten. That 46 wins is not enough. And he was like, and then he, Mike Brown said this too, any other season, 46 wins would have gotten you to the playoffs. But unfortunately it didn't, because the competition is so fierce.
Yeah. That's what's crazy is every team was at least 10 games over 500, the top 10. So compared that to the Eastern Conference, where, you know, your 9 and 10 spot are like 10 games below 500, is crazy to me. So it just goes to show how freaking hard the Western Conference is, and, you know, how moves have been constantly being made. You know, even teams at the trade deadline made moves that obviously made them better. So yeah, it's crazy that literally 46 wins, you're in the play-in situation, and, you know, you're, you know, fighting for your life basically. So, yeah, it goes to show that, you know, while you don't want to make like a risky move to where it's going to like either make or break your franchise, you kind of got to get a little more creative with what you're trying to do with your team to put you on an accelerated path to be better. Because now you're looking at it is you got teams like OKC, who's really, really young and had the first seed this season. You had Minnesota, who's pretty young as well, obviously outside of a few pieces. You have, you know, the Spurs, who can potentially, with a few pieces, be good again. You know, they were very competitive last season with Wembanyama. So a lot of these younger teams are obviously going to start making noise again. Houston is another one that, you know, is going to be, you know, good. Obviously, we struggled with Houston massively last year. So that's the tough thing, is this Western Conference is pretty much every team has the potential to be good next season. You can't say the same for the Eastern Conference, but definitely the Western Conference, depending on what happens, is each team has a potential to be good. So as a franchise, as an organization, you got to figure out, okay, what are we going to do to get us to that next level, you know, to help us beat some of these really, really good teams? Because again, these younger teams, they're not going anywhere for a while, because with OKC, they have like, I don't even know how many draft picks. It's ridiculous. So they can continue to do what they're doing and just even get better, which is crazy to me. So they're in a really, really good position. Utah is kind of another team, depending, you know, what they direction they decide to go. They have draft picks as well that they can do, you know, use. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting with these teams. But yeah, hopefully Monty, I feel like he's going to be working his butt off all summer, but it takes two to tango. So, you know, yeah, you could be calling all these teams, but you got to be able to pull off some trades at some point. So, you know, hopefully he's able to, you know, finesse a few teams, I should say.
So we're recording on Monday in Boston, just beat Cleveland 109-102. How do you feel about that Boston-Cleveland series right now?
I mean, Boston is a strange team, because I feel like, because people want to say like they're like a super team, but I don't necessarily think they're a super team. They're obviously really, really good. They have really, really good pieces. And then Cleveland, I feel like Cleveland's been semi-competitive. Obviously tonight I heard that they had no Donovan Mitchell. So that, again, with these injuries, it's like a bummer, because, you know, you're missing your big players and your stars to, you know, potentially help you win some of these games. So that series, I mean, I just kind of expected Boston to win, probably in four, you know, five games. I don't think Cleveland's going to win another game. So I feel like that series is most likely kind of wrapped up. But it's been a little bit entertaining, you know, especially, what was it, game two, when Cleveland went in and, you know, like beat them pretty, you know, handedly. So that was definitely interesting. But that's the weird thing about these playoffs, is like there's always a one or two games where teams are just getting destroyed. And I'm like, where is the competitiveness? But it's the three ball. The three ball has truly changed the freaking game, because when your team is shooting 50% or more from three, like, it's really, really hard to stay in a game when you're not shooting the same clip. So, yeah, it's definitely been interesting.
Right. And that was my main thing about Cleveland taking that one game. It's like, okay, well, they were on a heater. That's variance for you, right? I always talk about it every episode. And I think it's possible, especially when you have the personnel and you have good shooters, where, yeah, like you said, you shoot over 50%, you're probably going to win. And not to mention, Cleveland still has some good pieces. I'm still impressed by them that they did that without Jared Allen. They only had one alpha scorer in Donovan Mitchell. But, you know, length does matter. And, you know, when you have Evan Mobley, who still probably hasn't even found himself yet, but when you have somebody lengthy like that, very switchable, can do all the things that he can do, it helps. And it has me thinking about roster construction for the playoffs, which I'll get to a little bit later, because I do want to point out, you know, all the player types that all these successful playoff teams have, which is really interesting. But yeah, it's just upsetting that Boston's probably going to close it out the next time they play, since Donovan Mitchell may not be back because he has a calf injury. I'm assuming it's worse than Jamal Murray's calf injury, because Jamal Murray was able to play with a little sleeve on his calf, his left calf. But yeah, it's just really unfortunate that you know, the most successful teams are going to be the healthiest teams in these playoffs. Moving on, though, with Indiana and the Knicks, I'm impressed with Indiana that they're doing this without Ben Mathurin. And it just makes me wonder, it's like, with Andrew Nembhard, does that make Ben Mathurin expendable, or are they just going to like add to their team and just be 10 deep next season when Ben Mathurin's healthy? I think that's scary. I'm impressed with Indiana's depth, and I love that, you know, they're playing their rookie Ben Shepherd. So I do feel hopeful that the Kings will draft somebody that can immediately contribute right away. And granted, I'm not expecting, you know, someone at a Keegan level, but you never know, because, you know, good players can be had at the 13th spot. And then I was thinking about the Knicks and how they just have this plethora of great defenders at every position. And, you know, of course, when you have OG Anunoby, you always are giving yourself a chance. But then again, I'm thinking Indiana's probably going to win because OG Anunoby is out. And, you know, Julius Randle's already out. So it's quite frustrating.
Yeah, because it all kind of depends on what I feel like the core three in New York do. Because if Jalen Brunson gets hot, if he has like a 40 piece, because he's been struggling these past few games. He's, I think, had like 18 points the other night when they got blown out. But if he drops a 40 piece and you have DiVincenzo hitting, you have, Deuce hitting, if you have him hitting shots, if you have Hart hitting shots, you know, if you have guys like that contributing how they've been contributing, I can't count that Knicks team out, because I just feel like the way they play, they just have those guys, like those grind, like the guys that just want to grind it out and try to like fight for every rebound. I mean, it's just like insane what they've been doing, especially with the injuries. But yeah, the OG injury like really, really hurts. I think I don't know if they've even declared him out for next game, but probably. I mean, his injury doesn't sound good. So yeah, the fact that he's out, they obviously haven't had Randall. But I think OG is the true like factor. If they have OG, you know, obviously with his defense, and then he can obviously get some buckets as well. So yeah, that's another interesting series, but I still think New York can win the series, but Jalen has to be better every single game. Like, he basically has to carry the team like he's been doing. But just unfortunately, the past couple games, he's just not had that great of a game. But I think he's obviously dealing with the foot injury too. So it sucks.
Yeah, it really does. But shout out to Josh Hart for rebounding the hell out of the ball in playing all those minutes. Shout out to Dante DiVincenzo as well for being a true playoff performer. But it's just a matter of firepower. And yeah, honestly, if OG Anunoby was healthy, I would have them actually coming out of the East. I think they can give Boston a run for their money. It's just, unfortunately, again, health is super key. So on to the Western Conference. We have the Thunder and the Mavericks playing right now as we speak. And Dallas is up 54-43. How do you feel about that series?
I think it's competitive. I like the physical, you know, the physicalness between both teams. But I just think, unfortunately, Dallas is too much for OKC at this time, because OKC, like, I'm honestly surprised, because I said this before the season started, or maybe during the season, I did not think OKC would be able to get out of a first round playoff series. And for them to do so, and then obviously do so by beating the Pelicans 4-0, I just thought that was obviously crazy. But I just think Dallas all around is way too good for them. I just think you obviously have, you know, a 1-2 punch in Kyrie and Luka. So it's like, when Luka's not playing, when he's resting, you still have Kyrie on the floor who can freaking get absolute buckets, and vice versa with Luka. What he's doing with, like, all the lingering injuries that he's been dealing with is just absolutely crazy. But you have guys that also step up, you know, on that team. I mean, both of their centers, you know, with Gafford, Lively, they both contribute. Tim Hardaway Jr. just came back. I thought he had, like, a really good game the other night. You know, they just have so many different pieces that I just think OKC can't handle yet. Like, as good as, like, defensively as OKC is, they just don't really have that other score outside of Shai that is, like, consistent. Like, they have guys that can obviously get buckets, but on a consistent basis, they just unfortunately don't have that guy yet. So it's been a fun series to watch, but I think Dallas is gonna make it to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, and selfishly, I'm rooting for Dallas because I've always been a PJ Washington fan.
Yeah, PJ
Washington too. Gafford fan. I mean, if people listen to our podcast, we have mentioned them multiple times. You know, I have receipts on my timeline, but I don't want to get into that. But yeah, no, I'm impressed by Dallas's big two and how they are true playoff performers in Luka and Kyrie. And is it just me, or does Luka seem a lot less whiny than he is during the regular season? Am I imagining that, or is he still complaining to the refs? I feel like he's not as obnoxious in that way in this series.
I've seen, like, a few times, but nothing like crazy. I think obviously, you know, these are kind of, you know, obviously, yes, the regular season games matter, but especially when you're in tight playoff races, but obviously the playoffs are, like, bigger because each game counts, because eventually you can win or go home. So I feel like he's probably like, I need to chill with the, you know, ref stuff, because I don't want to get ejected, get technicals, because, I mean, especially, like, I don't even know how many technicals he has for the season, but those, I think, count, right? Like, if they have so many technicals and they get some in the playoffs, then they get automatically suspended for a game. So I think he's probably like, I can't hurt my team by doing stupid shit. So he is probably being a little bit smarter with the calls that he's arguing and, you know, how he's arguing and things like that. But there's been a few times that I've seen him, you know, definitely, you know, throw his arms up and not get back on defense and things like that. But for the most part, he's actually been pretty good this playoff
season. Yeah, that's why I'm glad you confirmed that, because he seems actually bearable this time around. And then with OKC, it's like, I'm impressed by their young depth with Aaron Wiggins and Kayson Wallace. It's like, I love seeing young players actually perform well in the playoffs, especially people like Aaron Wiggins. He's such a, like, a Miami Heat type of player, 6'5", multidimensional, just, you know, those utility players that for whatever reason, score at the right time, make the right play defensively at the right time. And they're good defensively, athletic. It's like, that's exactly what we need. Right. And then with OKC, they're going to go as far as Shai takes them to. I'm glad that my suspicions about Josh Giddey have come true. I'm not a hater or anything, but it's like, yeah, I've always wondered, like, we'll see what he does in the playoffs, and he's not doing well. And I just feel like, you know, people overrated him in the draft process. And don't get me wrong, there are players in the NBA that have these floors, and they're floor players where, yeah, they're going to do well and they're going to help your team go and be successful in the regular season. But when the playoff starts, that's when you have to be extremely good at one or two things, especially on the defensive end, which is where it truly matters. And yeah, he's being played off the floor, which is really interesting. So with OKC and Dallas, you know, as an older fan, yeah, I'm going to root for the older team. That's just how I roll. But it's still close so far, and it's early in the series, so we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, because what, it's 2-1 right now. So, I mean, if OKC can tie it up, then, you know, that kind of changes a lot of different things, because then they're going back home for game 5. So that's, you know, obviously an advantage. Your home court is always an advantage. So, yeah, I mean, they can definitely, they can make things happen, but every person on their team needs to contribute somehow, some way. And yeah, it's just, it's hard when you have a 1-2 punch with Luka and Kyrie, because the shots that Kyrie's been making, especially in these playoffs, that even the first series and now this series, is just absolutely crazy to me. Like, he is so freaking good. It's just like, I hate it. I just hate it because he's not on our team.
Right. And if there's anybody that could like carry their team to winning this series, it is going to be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I mean, I believe in his talent. But yeah, his teammates need to step up. Shout out to J-Dub. I think Jalen Williams has been great. Well, actually, he's been good, not great. So he needs to have a breakout game as well if OKC is going to get over this hump. So we'll see. Okay, so on to Denver in Minnesota, which is really fascinating. Mind blown, I'm not going to lie. I thought it would be 1-1. I thought they'd split those games in Denver. But Minnesota dominated them and had a 2-0 lead. They made Jamal Murray look extremely mortal. He just looked like Jamal Murray, not playoff Jamal Murray. Then they go to Minnesota, and Minnesota ties up the series. They changed their offense. They tweaked it. Instead of always going to the Jokic short roll in the middle, they kind of just are doing everything quicker. They're getting the ball out of everyone's hands quicker. Jamal Murray is just attacking the basket and passing up the entry pass to Jokic. It's really interesting. It's like a tactical battle. What do you think about that series?
I mean, it's a really, really good series to start. And then, I mean, just even like the first series, like I've just been really fascinated with what Minnesota's done so far in the playoffs. Like, the fact that they packed up the Phoenix Suns in 4 games is just insane to me, when they had the star power of Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker. So like, that was impressive in itself. Now you obviously get matched up against the defending champions, which is no easy task. And they go into Denver and they win the first 2 games. I mean, that's just, and the first game was like back and forth, you know, but the second game, they beat them pretty handedly. It wasn't even close. So that was like super impressive. But then, you know, obviously people are like, oh my goodness, like, you know, Denver's down 2-0, but it's like, they're the defending champs. They're going to figure it out. They're not getting swept. They're not the Phoenix Suns. It's not happening. So the fact that they made the adjustments that they've been making in these past 2 games is crazy. And Aaron Gordon has just been outstanding. Like, just the playmaking, the shot selection that he's been having. He's been like, obviously your guys, you know, you want Jamal, you want Jokic to do their thing. But, you know, when guys like that step up, that's just like those kind of X factors. So like Michael Porter Jr. has been really freaking good. Like, he's just been hitting like bucket after bucket, you know? So it's just been a really, really fun season or series. And like that freaking shot, like the 10 seconds left in like before halftime in yesterday's game, where it was like, Denver scored and then Minnesota tried to inbound it like really quick. And then the pass was like horrible. Freaking Murray picked it off. And then he just like made that shot, and it like didn't even touch the rim, just swish. And to have Kevin Harlan right there making the call, I mean, that's what you live for when you watch sports. Like, those type of moments are just what you enjoy. So I think like so far, like out of every playoff series, this series has been like my absolute fave because it's just ultra competitive, just shit talking non freaking stop. But it's like really, really good basketball is being played. So yeah, this like now it's 2-2 and you're going back to Denver. So it's going to be really, really interesting if Denver wins this next game, you know, because it's not going to be easy by any means. But I honestly, to me, I think whoever wins this series, I think is winning it all. I really do. I just don't think any team defensively and offensively have like enough, you know what I mean? And it's weird because like Denver, you look at Denver and obviously like they have Jamal Murray who has just been outstanding in the playoffs, you know, year after year. But then you have obviously Nikola Jokic, who's a 3-time freaking MVP. But like outside of that, it's like there's no like, you know, guys that are just like, ooh, you know what I mean? But like the guys, they just step up. Like Aaron Gordon, since he's got to Denver, has been so tremendous. Michael Porter Jr. has been really, really good, especially these past few seasons. But like their other guys just step up. Like Reggie Jackson has his moments. Christian, you know, Brown has his moments. And he's like, you know, what? He's only a second year player. So they just have those guys that they've been able to figure it out when they've lost, you know, some really big pieces.
And Justin Holiday.
Yeah.
The fact that Justin Holiday is getting more playing time than Peyton Watson, who absolutely killed it during the regular season. But because he's young, he's only in a second year or first. He got a DNP in the last few games. So it's like, damn. So now it's playoff basketball. The rotation has been shortened. It's wild. It's really interesting. But, you know, I love that he's stepping up too. Justin Holiday, good for him. Again, on the Minnesota side, I think it's wild that Denver, that's kind of, I don't want to say figure them out because who knows, maybe Minnesota adjusts, but for a while there, Naz Reid was like totally looking like a Jokic stopper. You know, that was interesting. Their length is so great. And they have Jaden McDaniels, right?
Yeah.
And Nikhil Alexander Walker, just guys that, I think this is where the league is heading. You need guys like that are lengthy and athletic and handsy and give people fits at the point of attack. And that's really interesting how Denver has countered that. So we'll see how the series goes moving forward. I would give the Mavs a chance if they're healthy. If Kyrie and Luka are healthy, they have a chance. It'll be interesting. Maybe they take Denver to six games.
Yeah, I mean, I just sometimes because Dallas is weird sometimes. I just because they had a few games, especially against the Clippers, where I'm like, what are you guys doing? You know what I mean? Like, what are you guys doing? Like, Kawhi is not even playing and you guys are getting blown out. Like, I get the shot making was incredible in those games, but you know, like there was like Lively was kind of struggling. Gafford kind of struggled. So there's like moments and this league is all about matchups and things. And I just don't think matchup wise, they'd be a good matchup against either Denver or Minnesota. I think they're not going to get swept by any means. I don't think that, but I just think matchup wise, I think both of those teams just have, I wouldn't say like better players, but just like, the chemistry is better. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a different feel with those other teams compared to the Clippers and OKC, you know, because the Clippers, I just think, you know, who knows what they're doing sometimes. Kawhi not playing. And I think they obviously played better without Kawhi because he was not healthy when he did play. So that just was a disaster itself. And then OKC is just really, really young. So like the Mavericks are going to have, I think, the advantage in both of those series. But with Denver and Minnesota, I'm like, I just don't know if they have that advantage with that whole team. So it's going to be a good Western Conference Finals regardless. But yeah, I think whoever comes out of this Denver Minnesota series, I think they're winning it all. I really do. I don't, like, as good as Boston is too, I still don't think the East can do it. I really don't. I just think the Western Conference is so much better.
And this is a Captain Obvious statement, but I think Aaron Gordon is one of the toughest matchups in the league.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
he's a big 6'8". There's levels to 6'8", right? He actually looks 6'9", 6'10", just because of his size. It's all muscle. So there you have 6'8", Aaron Gordon 6'8", but then there's like a Brandon Ingram 6'8". It's no contest, right? So I think he's, Captain Obvious. He's like a true X factor. He's a tough matchup for any team that they're going to be facing in the future. But speaking of matchups and speaking of the playoffs, what are the underlying player types that you see for all these successful teams that, I can't help but to think about the Sacramento Kings and what they need to be like these teams and get into the second round, get to the Western Conference Finals. For me, it's like the main glaring thing that we need is just rim protection. All these teams have somebody that can protect the rim. With Cleveland, it's Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. With Boston, they still have Horford, even though Porzingis is out. Indiana, we all know, has Miles Turner. The Knicks have Hartenstein. With OKC, we all know Chet is there. With Dallas, they have Lively, and then they also have Gafford. With Denver, they have all these perimeter players to help Jokic out because he's not necessarily known as a rim protector, but their defense is still good because they have athletic and lengthy personnel. And then we all know Minnesota has Rudy Gobert. They have Naz Reid. If the Kings are going to go further, we definitely need a rim protector.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think, obviously it's still kind of developing, some of your younger guys. Obviously, we saw, I think while he wasn't like all consistent, but Keegan got better. He did. Like, he added stuff to his game. He just wasn't a catch and shoot type of guy. He was getting to the basket. He was dunking. So it's like, if Keegan can continue to do that and get better and be more consistent with that, then you kind of have a little something in there. Now, now we saw the emergence of Keon Ellis, where it's like, okay, you have a guy who can score, but he's also playing tremendous freaking defense. So if he can continue to get better, because he's still young as well. So if he can continue to get better, you have another piece there. So now it's like, yes, we're, now you're looking at your bench a little bit and you're like, okay, what can we do in regards to kind of bolstering this bench up? Obviously the JaVale McGee experiment didn't work. He obviously, got some burn. It didn't work out. So they, went to Alex Len. Now it's like, I love Alex Len. Obviously, if you can get a guy that's an upgrade over Alex Len, you can't say no to that. So there's definitely some names that are going to be available that you definitely could look into to kind of be an upgrade over that. And then, what is Harrison Barnes? Like, what's that situation's going to be, Malik Monk? Cause if you can keep Malik, that's going to be huge as well. So I just think it's all about kind of, plugging and playing with your bench pieces, your rotation pieces, because we have our core guys. I think you obviously have, Fox, Sabonis, and Keegan's part of that core. He just is. Like, yes, he's obviously not at that level yet, but he's there, And so now it's just kind of, trying to figure out the rest of the pieces like every other team does, because if you look at Denver, they basically stuck with Porter Jr., Jokic, and Jamal Murray. And then they've kind of built around that. They got Aaron Gordon, and then they've kind of drafted, got some people via trade, via free agency, and they've been making it work. And that's kind of what I feel like every team now has been doing. Same with Dallas. They have Kyrie, they have Luka. Now they traded for Gafford and PJ Washington at the trade deadline, and those two pieces has been absolutely outstanding for them. So it's just, the Kings need to kind of figure out the plug and play situation, what's going to work, because yes, our bench did have like really good moments this season. I think our bench is really, compared to a lot of other teams in the West, is kind of not that good. So I think that's where they really need to focus, is getting those pieces, whether they got to trade Kevin Huerter. I mean, if Kevin moves to the bench maybe, and they start Keon, that can definitely be something, because I still think Kevin Huerter can play. He can still give you minutes, but can he give you starting minutes? Maybe not anymore. So it's definitely going to be very interesting, but they definitely have, they have areas that they can work with and improve on. And like I said, with rim protection, there's going to be some available names, you know, in this offseason that they can definitely take a look at as well to upgrade that spot, especially for, you know, once Sabonis gets off the floor.
And the draft as well, you know.
Yeah.
All right. So I feel like we covered a lot. And I'll leave you with this, with these final two questions. Is this season a failure or a success? And then what are your expectations for the summer? And then we'll close up shop.
I mean, it's hard to, I feel like every season is in a bigger scope is kind of a failure when you don't make the playoffs. But then again, there is some, you can have small victories too in that as well. Like your guys are continuing to get better. You know, Fox, I thought got better, especially defensively. He added more to his game. Sabonis, you know, in some areas I thought got better. He still can work on stuff as well. You know, obviously seeing what Keon can be now for the team is awesome. What Keegan, you know, I think can continue to get better as well. I thought Davion, you know, the second half after the trade deadline, I thought he was playing some tremendous ball. So it's definitely, you have those small victories where I think there's a lot of, you know, things that did go our way in some situations to where you're developing, you're still developing and getting better individually. Now it's trying to put it together. So I think, yeah, every season, I think if you don't make the playoffs is kind of a failure, but with the way, because I was trying to tell people this when I was like talking to them, I said, the thing with the Kings is we were semi-healthy to like start the season. You know, obviously Fox was injured a little bit. And then the middle of the season, I feel like we were probably our healthiest. But then towards the end of the season where everyone's fighting for playoff spots, we were the team that was not healthy compared to Dallas, you know, compared to Phoenix. You know, those teams started to get healthy at the right time. And unfortunately, we got healthy at the, or, you know, unhealthy at the wrong time. So I said that kind of stuff matters because, you know what I mean? Like, you're all just fighting for playoff spots. And I was like, I'll go back to that Dallas series where we played those two games back to back. I'm like, I'm sorry, if Malik is playing one of those games, we're splitting. We are splitting. We can cry to everyone's mom. I don't care. Like, I truly think Malik plays, we're splitting. We're not going down 0-2 against that Dallas team if, you know, Malik was playing. But, you know, everyone could say, what if, but. Yeah, I just think overall in the bigger scope of things, I do think this season was a failure.
Yeah, it's like a philosophical question because on one end, it's not a success because we didn't go to the playoffs. But then it's not a total failure either, right? With 10 games beat over 500, we beat the Dubs in the playoff game. You know, we slay our dragon, so to speak. We saw player improvement. So I feel like we're somewhere in the middle. If that makes sense, because I don't feel totally bad. There's a lot of hope left in this team. When the season ended, I felt more hopeful than down in the dumps. And then when you consider the payroll and our health, which was poor near the end of the season, it's like, yeah, we kind of ended up where we were supposed to be. I think if we were to overachieve and got into the playoffs, that would be considered an overachievement. Right, going into the playoffs, down one of our major stars, down one of our major self-creators in Malik Monk. So, yeah, I for me, I'm just gonna say we're somewhere in the middle. It's not like the Suns, where they're the most expensive team or they're the top three expensive team in the league as far as payroll is concerned, and then they get swept. I think that's worse than our situation, if that makes sense. And I'm sure there's some people like, oh no, they made the playoffs, but they were fully healthy and they have, you know, all that talent and they got swept. So whatever, yeah. It depends on how you see it, right?
Yeah. Like I said, you know, that's why I took the bigger scope and said failure, but there was small victories within that, you know, like I said, because you continued with a lot of individuals still getting better and still having room to grow, because I still feel like Fox can still even get better. I feel like Sabonis could even get better from, you know, this past year, and he had a tremendous season. So that's, that itself could be victories, because again, there's still a ton of room from your guys that are there for improvement. No one's capped out at their potential. I think everyone still has room to grow and still can meet their full potential.
So as far as expectations for the summer are concerned, you know, I do expect moves to be made. I've always said I don't mind Harrison Barnes off the bench. We do need to fill that power forward position spot, assuming that Keon Ellis is our starting two guard, which I have no problem with. I think I just have a good feeling about him, especially during the playoffs. I think he's going to ball out, especially with another year under his belt. And then we got to shore up, you know, a few bench pieces. I do want a rim protector. And people think I'm crazy, but I actually think a rookie could still perform in a very limited role at the power forward spot. All you have to do is just keep it simple, right?
Yeah.
Just a rim protect, and hopefully we could get actually a stretch big where, and then just shoot threes. So a limited role like Keegan offensively, where all he did was, you know, be a spot up shooter, and he was successful at it. And then also on the defensive end, you know, be our rim protector, be our roamer, cause a little chaos. And I think that's fair. I don't think that's too big of a role for a talented rookie to play, whoever that is, or unless we get somebody off free agency, or if they're, we miraculously pull out a trade. But yeah, so yeah. I expect that. And then, you know, I'm positive all of our players are going to improve. And yeah, all I ask is just be better and let's make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, that's really all you can do, right? Is just ask for your team to get better the following season. And then, you know, because every team can make these trades and, you know, sign these free agents. And yeah, it looks really good on paper. And I don't know how many times I've freaking said that over the years with this damn team. And then come season time, it just is a disaster. So, like, obviously, depending on, like, the names that come or don't come, you know, whatever. Like, yeah, we could be like, oh, okay, this, you know, this could be something. But again, it comes season time, because then you got injuries and, you know, all that stuff. Those are all always going to come into factor. So I just think as long as they're doing the necessary things to put the team into a situation where their potential could, yes, they could be better, but then also keeping, you know, the future flexible as well. Because we're seeing it right now, where some of these teams are just trying to go all in and it's really backfiring on them. And then they're kind of like stuck in a situation that they don't want to be in. So I think that's what I love about Monty so much, is he wants to make the team better, but he also wants to, you know, keep the options open with the flexibility and things like that, where he's not capping this team out to where you make a move and then that's it. Then you're done. You can't make any more moves, or then you're just basically going to have to blow it up. So yeah, that's just, this summer is going to be interesting with what they do. I think the biggest, obviously, is what the Malik Monk thing, like, what's that, what's going to happen with that? You know, the draft situation, you know, what's going to happen with that as well. But yeah, I do trust the front office, you know, the work that they put in. And so far, you know, they've done a really good job. Obviously there's been a few things that they could have done better, but I think that's with every front office. Not every GM is going to be absolutely flawless and perfect. But yeah, I'm looking for them to now kind of, they said, okay, we're going to run it back this season, but now it's time to, you know, kind of shake some things up, because this team does need to get better. We need to be in the playoffs next year.
Yeah. And I expect Monty to cook with the 13th pick. I believe in their scouting. And then not to mention, you know, I think we are going to make big moves. So within the next 3 years, we have to make a push, because after that, it's going to be a battle between Wemby and OKC for the next, you know, 5 years after that, as far as them being in the Western Conference Finals. Once they find the right pieces, I think the Spurs are going to be a load to handle, as well as the Thunder, if they, you know, hit on their future draft picks. I think both teams are looking scary. But, and then I'm never going to count Denver out as well. But things are on the up and up. Thank you, Liz, for your time, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in. you know, we'll be here probably, we'll be dropping new episodes once a week, all summer. I think that's the goal, but thank you for listening. Please subscribe because that helps the algorithm. Again, thanks for listening, y'all. Good day, good night, and light the beam.